Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
inspiration, Move Me Brightly.
Hey everybody, it's Patrick here on behalf of Jim Linehan. I want to welcome everybody to the third and final episode in our Rest in Power Bob Weir series. This is the encore, just like the Dead would do it, two sets and an encore. So here's ours. I want to thank once again Rob Gates, Kevin Bartlett, Jason Goble, and especially want to give a little shout out to Rob. He brought up the fact that we didn't discuss a key figure in Bobby's songwriting career. So you'll hear that near the end of this episode as well. It's a complex story with a lot of characters. But we're going to bring it to a close today. And we're going to start this encore with Jason Goble. You're going to hear him talking about a jam band named Goose. What they felt and what they posted about the passing of Bobby is really quite nice, quite moving. So that's what we're going to start with. We've got the TDK tape threaded up with an old Dead bootleg on the other side, and we're going to play now the final section for you. Rest in power, Bob Weir.
One of the things that kind of stood out in that other one special was there was a quote from Sammy Hagar, and Sammy Hagar basically said something. You know, he ultimately, again, not really a jam band guy, but San Francisco scene obviously was very friendly with Bob. And, you know, he said that, like, you know, Bobby may have been something to the effect that Bobby may have been the best number two. And, you know, and where he said is that if you sacrifice ego and you basically dedicate your life to being a number two, and you're the best number two, there's definitely nothing wrong with that. And along those lines, one of the things Goose said in their, like, email or in their, you know, Blue Sky message that they gave as to Bob Weir, the second paragraph, you know, after basically telling how much he meant to them. And, I think it was called Dead Playing in the Sands in Mexico. And the Dead gave a night to Goose to basically headline. And, you know, obviously he ended up playing with Goose, I think, a few times. And the second quote after thanking them, or second paragraph, is, "Standing on stage with you was never just about collaboration. It was about connection, about listening, about learning what it really means to show up for the music, to let it lead, and reminding us that this isn't about ego or generations or genre. It's about honesty, curiosity, and the endless conversations that music allows us to have with one another." And I'll be honest, that has stuck out with me since I saw this, because frankly, I think that has been the best summary of Bobby to a T.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
You know, there's that famous, quote Bobby had from The Dream, you know, The Dream quote, where he said that he was, you know, looking down from heaven, and he saw, you know, John Boy and O'Teal, you know, playing on stage and carrying on the music. And I think he's always felt that he wanted the music to continue. I think Jerry also felt that they wanted the music to continue. The music was bigger than the band. And I'm not sure there's actually a lot of bands that can make that claim.
I think you're exactly right about that. I really do. And I think that's come through in, you know, in the things that we've been talking about. Very, very much so. That's good
ammunition for Kevin's argument about the Dead being the greatest American band.
I was going to say one more thing.
Sure.
You know, that occurred to me, you know, when we were watching or going to Dead shows in the 90s, yeah. You know, there was an underlying feeling that Jerry was probably, you know, close to the end. I mean, he just yeah. did not look good. You know, and that his time was limited. With Bobby, you really got the sense that this guy was going to live forever. You know, that he was going to be up there 100 years old playing on stage. You know, he had his gym routines. He was still out doing the biking, you know, all that stuff. And I think this, you know, sort of more of a shock, I think, to people that, you know, he died.
Yes.
You know, and isn't, you know, the last guy standing. You know, again, with Bill Kreutzmann, for sure, and Mickey Hart, but it just sort of grips differently. I don't think people were expecting this at all.
Along the lines of what Rob just said, you know, after they did, I guess, their 360, you know, I guess 10-year anniversary, Dead & Company, I think it stood in for the 60th anniversary of the Dead shows in San Francisco at Golden Gate. I know, like, me and my friend, that friend Matt I was talking about, like, we kept on, you know, we were kind of surprised. Like, we didn't see anything, like, on any of the website, like, anything announcing Weir was playing, like, either with the Wolf Brothers or they didn't announce, like, playing Mexico. And, you know, it was our hope, like, okay, maybe they just decided to take it easy for a little bit. They're just gearing up for their next run in Vegas. So, you know, to that end, you know, he was a guy who I think was on the road, I want to say, like, at least half the year. And, you know, it's the type of thing that, again, he lived the music and he wanted to keep playing the music. And I think that was the shock. I remember I found out, you know, somebody posted something on Blue Sky that I got the alert. I'm like, no, really? No, yeah. Come on. It can't be. And then, you know, I went to the internet and saw all the stories.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that because, Jim and I and Tim Hoffman and our wives were actually at a concert watching this guitar player, this Japanese guitar player, who was doing some amazing stuff when Rob's message came through to our group. And we couldn't believe it. You know, I still didn't believe it by the time I walked out to the car and then we heard it on the radio. But I'm with Rob. You know, I thought he'd be up on stage with his beard like touching the ground, you know, and like still wearing shorts behind it, you know. Like,
he was not on my bingo card for musical deaths of 2026 yeah. at all, you know. And I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, we've touched on this a bit, and of what Bobby kind of became, and I heard this term used, and it's almost like he was a shaman, right? And I think that's so well described.
Yeah.
And, you know, I, like you all, shock. I'm going to miss him. And, you know, he's the last of the singers of the Grateful Dead. And, you know, fare thee well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, all of us who were able to see him certainly are thankful for the fact that we got to. So, if long time listeners of our podcast, you can go all the way back, believe it or not, to episode 129, triple digits. And Rob Gates is talking about a Dead & Company show that he saw in 2017. So you can go way back. Rob, I would like to just to ask you, since you have seen so many shows featuring Bob, is there one moment or one night or anything that really stands out in your memory from seeing him?
So in the Bob Weir era, there actually is, and I say Bob Weir post Jerry era.
Okay.
And it was at the Jiffy Lube Live here at here in Northern Virginia.
Yep.
And it was the first show after COVID. And walked into the show, and they opened with Feel Like a Stranger, which was a pretty standard Grateful Dead opening. Yep. And I remember starting to cry and saying, "We're back. It's back."
Yeah. That's beautiful.
And Bobby just belted that tune out. And those opening guitar riffs to Stranger, which are so unmistakable. That would be one moment that I definitely remember.
That's very powerful.
I've got one, Patrick.
Okay.
This was when the Dead were still, performing. I think. Yeah. No, they definitely were. This is when Bob met up with Rob Wasserman, and it was the Bob and Rob show. And so they during the off times that the Dead weren't touring, they would tour. And if people don't know, Rob Wasserman, tremendous bass player who passed away, mm-hmm. Way too early, in 2016. But I remember going to see them, and the name of the show was Further, incidentally enough. And they had Bruce Cockburn and Susan Vega kind of opening up. But it was a cover that they did, and it was Easy to Slip by Little Feet. And Rob just on the it was like an electric stand-up bass type thing, and Bobby just interacting with that song, just it was very powerful for me. And it could have been the drugs.
Or the music. Or the combination.
No, it's a combination. So those two are. Yeah, that's the whole experience.
Yeah, there you go.
Jason, what about you? You have any memories?
The one thing, when I was communicating with a friend of mine, and we were kind of running. It's the guy, again, my friend Matt, that's who I end up going to the Sphere shows with, and first thing that kind of popped in, like he texted me and he said, I'm really glad we went to that second year of Sphere shows. And I agreed. And, you know, we both kind of remembered that the last show we saw, and for me, this was my last Dead & Company show. I did not watch, you know, we had Suburbs Fest over the San Francisco run. I never watched video of the replays. The last night of that run of shows, not that there was anything wrong with this, but the first couple of nights were really kind of dominated by John. Saturday night was definitely a Bob show, meaning, and I realized that there wasn't necessarily at that point, you know, it's weird to say that in light of what we're saying, but they opened with a cover of Tangled Up in Blue, which I think they debuted. I don't even know if they had done it ever before with Bob singing. And I sort of, you know, and then they did like a number of the songs that like kind of Bob like really took lead on in Dead & Company shows. Shakedown Street, Estimated Profit. Terrapin, they all took a turn of singing, but one of my favorite parts of when you would get a Dead & Company Terrapin was when you get to like the buildup after the dramatic music and Bob would start just talk singing and booming out Inspiration, Move Me Brightly, and I think even like Knocking on Heaven's Door, which I think closed that night, like, or at least before the encore. He, you know, that was really a Bob song also. And I remember me and my friend were hanging out in the lounge and in one of the Vegas lounges after the show. And we were kind of like, you know, this was Bob saying to John, hold my beer. Tonight is my light. Tonight is my night at the end of the day. So, you know, I guess, you know, I have plenty of great John Bobby moments, but to me, like, that being my last Dead & Company experience and, you know, being a show that was really Bobby focused, it makes me kind of happy.
Write the song with sense and color, all the way to spare. More than this I cannot ask, faced with mysteries dark and vast. Statements just seem vain at last. Some rise, some fall. Get to Terrapin. Counting stars by candlelight, say what ding but one that bright. Spiral eyed of Venus, rising first and shining best. All from the northwest corner of a dim new crescent moon. Crickets and cicadas sing.
Bobby definitely had a stage presence. You know, he was always there with the great one-liners. You know, we want to make sure everything is absolutely perfect. You know, he had all the screams during the songs that people didn't quite know what to make of. and he just did so many sort of, you know, he had the jorts. Like, he was his own, he was his own personality inside sort of this, you know, contrasting to Jerry, which is just...
There was a gift today of the shorts flying on a flagpole, which definitely brought me a little joy today.
Well, I think that's just it. I think that kind of sums up the Dead, you know, and what they all did, right? So Jerry brought something, and then his stage presence was, you know, like I said before, if he moved, you know, and he's in sweatpants and a t-shirt. Bob is there in shorts and a polo shirt.
Right.
And Birkenstocks.
You know, and then you got Phil, who is wearing a tie-dye. It's like Phil is keeping it tight to the past, right? Bobby is like, you know, I'm in the 90s, you know, man. We're moving forward, you know. I'm going to go play Wimbledon. And Jerry is just freaking Jerry, right? You know? But the drummers are back there doing the drummer things that they do.
Yeah, right.
You know, and again, this is coming from that Other Ones documentary. They spend about like 5 minutes basically saying that, you know, Bob was like sort of the heartthrob of the band. You know, like I think I forgot who the guy is that, you know, they have. I think it was definitely one of their touring entourage guys, but, you know, back, you know, behind, you know, roadies.
Steve Parrish.
Yeah, and I think it's Steve Parrish who has the quote that it was like essentially beautiful Bobby and the Ugly Brothers. And like Mickey Hart, like, he's saying, yeah, it was Bobby who brought in the women, and then ultimately, you know, we essentially benefited at the end of the day.
Right.
There are bootlegs, you know, and I think this was one of the reasons I sort of avoided the Dead until I ultimately got sucked into the madness. You know, somebody would write on a bootleg, like, start a set two, take a step back. And then I like, put that on. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, what's going on? He's just saying, take a step back. Why did somebody write that on their tape at the end of the day?
That's great. And I don't know, Rob, do you have any insight on, or anybody, went where all that cowboy song stuff came from with Bob? Like, I mean, the times I've heard him do like Marty Robbins songs, you know, it's just like, that's amazing. Like,
I'm a Haggard, truck, he covered yeah. Haggard, you know. I do, you know, I think so he released an album in 2016 called Blue Mountain, which goes through kind of like he's reminiscent of his childhood, you know, being out. And I think he spent some time, I don't know if it's Montana or Wyoming or something, you know, out there. I think that's where it comes from.
Interesting.
I just think he had an affinity and a love for it. And he was damn good at singing and playing it, too.
West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime to find me in Rose's Cantina, music would play and fading up would whirl. Black as the night were the eyes of Felina, wicked and evil while casting a spell. My love was strong for this Mexican maiden, was in love but in vain I could tell. One night a wild young cowboy came in, wild as the West Texas wind. Crushing and bearing a drink he was sharing with wicked Felina, the girl that I love. So in anger I challenged his right for the love of this kid, down with his hand for the gun that he wore. Challenge was
answered in less than a heartbeat. Some young stranger lay dead on the floor. Just for a moment, stood there in silence, shocked by the foul evil deed I had done. Many thoughts raced through my mind as I stood there. I had but one chance, that was to run. Out through the back door of roses I ran, where the horses were tied. I picked a good one, he looked like a good one. Up on his back and away I did ride, just as fast.
You know, another thing about Bobby, Patrick, is I don't think we can really discuss him without mentioning John Perry Barlow, who wrote a lot of the songs that Bob performed. Most fans of the Dead know that the band functioned with two lyricists, primary lyricists, Robert Hunter, who wrote a lot of Jerry's songs. I should say wrote all of Jerry's songs and also wrote some songs for Bobby, especially at the beginning. But there was a falling out, and legend has it. And I don't know where rumor becomes legend, but we'll, for these purposes, we'll call legend, is that Bobby disagreed with some of the lyrics that Hunter had written for Sugar Magnolia, which really peed off Hunter because he liked his songs presented the way they were. Bob had a habit of changing lyrics, and Sugar Magnolia was not the only one. And Hunter handed Bobby off to this fellow called named John Perry Barlow, who is also a songwriter in the beat tradition, as Hunter was a beat poet with the rest of them. And Barlow is actually involved with the Dead early on and was the one who introduced them to Timothy Leary. And we could do an entire podcast on the life and times of John Perry Barlow. He's a very fascinating individual. And especially later in his life, he became very interested in internet freedom and freedom of speech on the internet. And was a founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, among other things. He's also a Republican, which many people don't know. He worked on Dick Cheney's first congressional campaign, but really self-described, I would say. Well, not self, I would describe him more libertarian than anything else. And if you look at his songs, a lot of his songs that he wrote that Bob performed are in that libertarian tradition, a lot about freedom and doing what, you know, one wants to do, which I also think appealed to Bobby. You know, Barlow is a rancher, is from Wyoming. Bobby, we talked about, had this cowboy, sort of speak about him. And I think the two meshed very well. And Barlow wrote some, the more popular Bob songs. Sort of Barlow is involved in the scene. He's a self-described acid head. So, was involved prior to the acid tests, because like I said, he introduced, the Dead to Leary and then to Kesey and all that. So he was involved in the early days. We mentioned Bobby's Ace album, and Barlow, had a lot of writing credits on that album. And that's where it really began. So you have, Black Throat of Wind, Looks Like Rain, a lot of those off of that album. He also wrote for Bobby, close to 30 songs, if not more. He wrote Cassidy with Bobby, also on Ace. Estimated Profit, which, was a concert favorite, featured Bobby in The Scream. Feel Like a Stranger, Hell in a Bucket, I Need a Miracle, so on and so forth. So lot of songwriting credits and a lot of the songs that Bob made, set Bob apart really in the band, which is interesting because you look at a composition like Playing in the Band, which is really a band forward. It was a Bobby song, but it was really a Grateful Dead composition.
The one I found to be interesting, because one of my favorite Dead albums, and I don't know if a lot of people like it or maybe rank it among their studio albums as high as I do. I really like Wake of the Flood. And the only credit on that whole album for Bob is a song that's also credited to John Perry Barlow and a singer-songwriter, I think, called Eric Anderson, and that's the Weather Report suite. Is that something they would play in concert or not all that much?
So when it first came out, they played it in concert.
Okay.
The whole thing. So you had the...
If
you look at it on the album, there's a Weather Report suite. I forget what the first part of that is, but the second part of it is called Let It Grow.
Yes.
Not to be confused with the Eric Clapton song of the same no. title. But that was played very often in concert. Often as a first set closer.
Oh, really? Interesting.
And I also agree with you that Wake of the Flood was their best studio album.
Morning comes, she follows the path to the river shore. Lightly sung, her song is the latch on the morning's door. See the sun sparkle in the reeds, silver beads pass under the sea. She comes from a town where they call her the woodcutter's daughter. She's brown as the bank where she kneels down to gather her water. And she bears it away with a love that the river has taught her.
We talked about Bobby changing lyrics around. He changed the lyrics a couple times to Black Throated Wind throughout the life of that song. Finally reverted back to the original ones, but it played around with some others that the fans, you know, really didn't like. Of course, if you had memorized all the lyrics and then you were singing them in the show, right, and Bobby digresses, you know, what do you do there?
Yeah, that's going to mess up your sing-along. That's for sure.
It sure is.
And I guess Barlow was okay, though, with Bob changing his lyrics or improvising, whereas Robert Hunter certainly wasn't having it.
Well, Hunter's, if you look at Hunter's lyrics, most of them tell a story. And yeah, if you go and start changing them around, you alter the story that he's trying to tell.
Right.
And the man's an amazing storyteller.
Yeah.
And, you know, Barlow's lyrics were more, again, conceptual, thematic, mm-hmm, more so than storytelling. You know, one of the reasons why I love the Grateful Dead is picturing, you know, what's going on in the songs and the stories that Hunter's telling,
yeah,
as they're being sung.
It's an element that I think, you know, sometimes gets overlooked, I think, with the band's music when you're talking about stretching out and improvising and listening closely to the two guitars and all that. But yeah, it's definitely a dimension of their music that's quite fascinating. Hunter and Barlow certainly playing a big part in that.
So Bobby's last album, solo album, came out in 2016, called Blue Mountain. You know, sort of a throwback cowboy, slower, you know, as you can imagine, retrospective, I think, as Bobby knew he was getting.
Yeah.
No Barlow on that. Of course, you know, he was not doing well at that point. John Ritter gets a lot of the writing credits there. And Bobby also is credited with co-writing some of the songs, some of the words with Ritter. So, you know, there was some, but Bobby didn't do a lot of writing during his career. But what he did do was a lot of playing. And I think I figured that Bob Weir has probably performed live in front of more people than anybody else on the planet.
Wow. Think about that. That's incredible. I can believe it too. Starting from 1960 something, 66, right? With the, right after the Warlocks turned into the Grateful Dead. That's amazing. Yeah.
All the Grateful Dead concerts, all the collaborations he did, all the stuff he did with Dead and Company, all the solo stuff he did, not packing houses per se, but again, still performing in front of people.
Right.
You know, but just the sheer longevity of filling arenas and filling concert venues. Like, I can't think, I think you'd have to look back at someone like maybe Sinatra,
yeah,
you know, who had, you know, a decades and decades long career of filling rooms. But I don't think Sinatra toured as much as the Grateful Dead did.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, Sinatra might have done residencies here and there, or, you know, played some big concert halls, but nowhere near the way that Bob Weir did. And I think you mentioned early on how much time he spent on the road in his life. I mean, it's just kind of amazing.
Yeah, he loved to perform, I think. And I think that's all he knew how to do, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. That really is amazing to think about that. Wow. So, yeah, you know, it might be good to play out with something from Bob's last solo album, Blue Mountain. Put you on the spot, Rob, here. What do you think would be a good song to play out with?
Well, there's a bunch of good songs on the album. You've got Only a River and you've got Lay My Lily Down, but I think I would go with Gonsville, which seems to be somewhat appropriate, you know, at this moment.
I love it. Love it. That's a great call. Well, thank you guys so much. This is great. This has been a lot of fun. Rob, Kevin, Jason, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. There's obviously love and affinity in all you guys' hearts for Bobby and the music. So I really appreciate you sharing it with all of our listeners. I think they'll get a kick out of it. Jason, thanks. And Rob, thanks. Thank you so much for sharing, Rob, very much. All right, folks, you've got plenty of Grateful Dead to listen to. And we are all going to continue to do that as well. So thanks for listening to Rockin' the Suburbs. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I'm Patrick Foster, and Jason Goebel, Kevin Bartlett, and Rob Gates have been with me. Thank you, gentlemen. And we will talk to you guys tomorrow.
My contraband in the velvet tea, it still remains. I'm going gone to Gonesville. I'm going gone to Gonesville. Go, go, gone to Gonesville. I'm gone. Oh. Hey.
that whistle more. Your gun is retreat. Well, they say it might rain forever, but it sure can't rain on me. I'm about to get gone. I'm about to be free. I'm going gone.
And I heard this term used, and it's almost like he was a shaman.